Good afternoon. Welcome to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM for our friends on the Greater East Side. A new anti-gun bill just was signed into law. It has nothing to do with safety. That is what's trending.
What's trending? Legal.
So this new law says that you've got 24 hours to report a stolen firearm. If you don't, you get hit with a $1,000 fine. Now, up until this bill was signed, the law was actually 5 days. You had 5 days to report this. Now, that made sense to me, 5 days rather than one, because if you were the victim of a crime or if you're out of town, you don't even know that the gun was stolen, you want a little bit of room, right? If you're a victim, you're thinking to yourself about what had just happened to you, and you might forget to do something, even though it seems pretty basic. And obviously, if you're out of town, let's say you're gone for more than 5 days, you know, that's the rarity. But usually, if it's going to happen, according to our history, at least, it didn't come up all that often. One day probably would come up sometimes, at least. Now, they do say in the bill that if you have a good cause for not doing it within a day, that you're going to be fine. Ultimately, the weird thing about this, just from a practical standpoint, I don't mind this bill that much. I don't like it. I'll tell you why in a second. But from a practical standpoint, like I'm not concerned that this is going to be used against gun owners, because frankly, guns don't get stolen in this context all that often, which then makes you wonder, why did they push this bill to begin with? Now, if you ask the people who are the proponents, they will tell you that it's to protect law enforcement from frustration. That's actually what they said. And they quoted in this Como story two of the people, two representatives of groups that spoke up in favor of this bill that is now law. The first one is Moms Demand Action, which has no connection whatsoever to law enforcement. In fact, that is just simply an anti-gun group. And then they heard from the King County Public Health Department, which again has literally nothing to do with law enforcement. And yet Como said, this is according to these two agencies or group in an agency. They support this because, quote, it frustrates the ability of law enforcement to protect the community when firearms are not reported as stolen in an adequate amount of time. Now, the first thing I thought was, okay, it frustrates law enforcement. Why didn't they say anything? Why didn't law enforcement step forward and say this is very frustrating for them? They fully endorse, they fully support this bill. Was there a single person from a law enforcement agency that was represented during the four different public testimonies? I sent producer Jackson to look it up. Did you find any?
Couldn't find one.
That's kind of odd because I'm told that this is really frustrating to law enforcement. So that was the first thing. And then the second thing was, okay, let me just go with their argument. Why would it frustrate law enforcement? What? That doesn't make any sense to me. How would, huh? What part of this is frustrating to them? Why does it matter from their perspective if you report it within 24 hours or if you wait 3 days? Like, why would it matter? Now, Carol Butterfield with Moms Demand Action, she looks precisely the way you think based on the name Butterfield. She said that she supports this bill because she's all pro-cop and something or other.
The reporting of missing weapons is crucial for law enforcement to recover and return lost or stolen guns to their rightful owner.
Okay, I got that part. Yes, I understand that when you tell someone you lost, I know how lost and found works. Like, that part I get. But I sincerely doubt that law enforcement is super frustrated. Like, man, I've been hanging on to this Glock for like 7 days now. When will so-and-so call and claim it? Like, that's not happening.
HB 1903 will also help law enforcement track the guns and disarm individuals who are in illegal possession of a firearm.
How do you track a gun that's stolen? What do you mean you're tracking a what? Or do guns now have, like, trackers on them? Are they now, like, GPS searchable? Do we know where the, what in God's name is she talking about? And it's not only Carol Butterfield who's making this argument. She was taking the talking point, essentially, from State Representative Liz Berry, who's the sponsor.
This is before the trail gets cold, and this gives law enforcement the tools to investigate and identify patterns of gun trafficking.
What? What are you talking about? In many cases, not all, in many cases, guess what? People don't even realize their guns were stolen. And it's one stolen gun that ends up getting used in multiple crimes. And reporting a stolen gun is not going to end that. It's not going to be able to track this down. Now, I imagine every once in a while, you might say, well, if you tell someone early, they can check the Ring camera to see if, you know, anything, you know, was caught on video. And I was thinking, like, but chances are you're already calling 911 if someone broke into your home or in your car and stole a bunch of your stuff. And so the cop who's there when you call 911, when they show up, will already have asked what was stolen. Was everything so? Do you own a handgun? Like, they asked that question. So none of this really makes any sense. Because the first time, day one, you call a cop and say, oh, you know, my gun was stolen. They're like, okay, we wrote it down. Thanks. We'll let you know if we find it. That's it. They would have said that on day five. They would say that on day 20. Now, let's say they found the gun that was committed, that was used in a violent act. Okay, well, now they're able to track it via the registration, but let's say for some reason they weren't able to do that. Were you the one who shot some? No, you weren't? Okay, well then you're fine. Here's your gun back. I honestly don't understand what it is they're saying here. It's like, you call 911. I'll let you, Producer Jackson, you can be the person who report. This is called a role play. I'll let you play the person who calls and says a gun was stolen, okay? You ready? Okay, hold on. Bring. Hello, this is Sergeant Rant. I'm a sergeant. This is Sergeant Rance.
Hi, I'd like to report that my gun has been stolen.
Okay, what city are you in?
Issaquah.
Oh my God! I was just looking into a murder that happened in Issaquah on 123 Main Street. Is that your address?
Yes.
Oh my God! It turns out I was already there and I already looked at your camera footage. I got what I needed. I already knew it was stolen, dummy. Why are you calling? Did you tell an officer there? I mean, seriously, what is the conversation supposed to be? What is the conversation supposed to be? 9 times out of 10, this will have no benefit whatsoever to the cop. So why is it that they're doing this? What's the reason? They're doing this for two reasons. Reason number one, it's a silly reason in this case, but they want to put more of a burden on gun ownership. That's part of this. They think that by putting more laws in place, it might disincentivize someone from choosing to become a firearm owner. They're going to say to themselves, ah, you know, I guess it does remind me that guns can get stolen. And do I really want to have to deal with, ah, never mind, I'm not going to do it. They think that that works. I don't know if this is going to push anyone in that direction, but I do think that that's part of this issue. Reason number two, they want you to think that guns are incredibly dangerous, that they're getting stolen left and right, and it's your average law-abiding gun owner who is responsible, truly, for the violence that we're seeing out on the streets. This is a way to deflect some of the blame from the actual criminal and put it on the person who was not a responsible gun owner. Now, there are plenty of irresponsible gun owners, I guess. They're not quite as many as you think. This is yet another completely contrived issue. Here's Dave Workman.
The suggestion that that's going to do something to curb crime is just nonsense.
I like it when he says it because he reminds me of, what's his name? Walter Brimley. Is that his name?
I think it's...
what's his first name?
Wilford Brimley.
Wilford Brimley with the diabetes. That guy.
He looks like Andy Reid, kind of.
He does. Yeah, I'll give you that. So that's really all that this is about. And here's the deal. Good news, folks. Your gun's probably not going to get stolen. Just put it in a safe. Bam. Look what I just did. I saved everyone the hassle of having to even report a stolen handgun. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Safety first.
Pete Buttigieg, Mayor Pete, little Mayor Pete. He was on Fox News this morning. They got into the woes of Boeing. Boeing is obviously going through, as of now, a little bit of a shift in leadership. I actually heard from a Boeing engineer locally who just got the memo from the new commercial air CEO. And just reading parts of the memo, it seemed pretty clear that at least on paper, they're taking these challenges head on. They do, in fact, want to change the culture. Now, it's one thing to put in a memo your intentions, especially when you know the memo is going to get leaked. But it's another thing to actually put that memo into action. We're not going to know within the next few days or maybe even few weeks or even few months whether or not they're doing enough to change the culture. Culture is not easy to shift. Now, certainly when there have been a bunch of high-profile screw-ups and people's jobs are on the line, you do have a little bit more of a motivation to switch things up. But it does take time. I obviously want Boeing to succeed. All of us should want Boeing to succeed because it's not just about the jobs that Boeing directly is responsible for here in Washington State, something like 68,000. It's not just about that. It's about all the other jobs as well that's connected to Boeing, the contractors, all the way down to the corner shop that sells them coffee in the morning on the way into the office in Renton or Everett. I mean, that's what we're talking about. And all of those people will suffer if Boeing suffers. So Pete Buttigieg was asked about this. What should they be looking for in a new CEO? And he said this.
You know, what I'll say is whoever is going to lead Boeing going forward needs to lead Boeing in a direction where culturally and operationally they are 1,000% on top of all quality and safety issues. And FAA's taken an extraordinary step of restricting how many aircraft they can produce isn't going to allow them to produce any higher numbers of aircraft until and unless they can demonstrate that they can do it safely.
And essentially this forced slowdown is, during this time, it is so important for Boeing to either stop the bad press or start to shift the narrative into positive press, right? Because what happens when you have a slowdown in planes that are being produced? Well, now you're vulnerable to Airbus coming in and saying, well, we don't have to deal with this. Why don't you give us a shot? And they provide really good airplanes. They can certainly say, well, we haven't had a fuselage door saying peace out before it blew up off of it. Like, that's all that they have to do. And they're going to see some wins. Again, we talked about this in the international market. It was Korea Airlines that purchased only Airbus planes. Boeing was part of it. They wanted to sell some, and they said, nah, we're going to pass. We're going to go with Airbus. That's a vulnerability. And it feels like people locally are not taking this seriously enough from an economic standpoint. I've heard some people, and we got some text messages earlier at 1-800-465-8770, effectively saying Boeing is too big to fail. It's not too big to fail. I get that it doesn't just produce airplanes for commercial use. I get that. But that is a part of their business, and it represents a lot of money. More importantly, it represents a big piece of our economy here in Washington State. It may not matter nationally for the economy. It does matter here. And we don't want to go down that path. And it just feels like people are not taking that seriously enough. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Everyone is a hero.
So, you know what? You know, you don't have to make fun of her. Cookie, Detective Denise Cookie, she's actually a hero, kind of. I will say this. There is nothing more humbling than losing in chess to a child. There is nothing more humbling than that. There used to be a chess kids club down the street. And a few years ago, I thought it might be an interesting bit to go down there and to completely humiliate some 11-year-old kid at chess, because this was to teach them chess. Turns out it wasn't to teach them chess. They already definitely know chess. It's really to get them to a level where they can beat the chess master wizard or whatever that thing is. That might actually be a KKK. What do they call that? The Grand Wizard is the bad one.
That's the KKK, I
yeah,
think.
What's the chess people? The
what,
chess gods.
Grandmaster?
There you go. I mean, that sounds just as KKK as the only
a little bit.
So I go down there, not realizing that, until the kid starts taunting me. I went in ready to taunt. And we have this on video somewhere on my Facebook page. I was in there ready to taunt. I did last like 4 minutes, which is more than someone else who was with me at the time lasted. So I will throw that out there because I'm pretty good at chess. But when an 11-year-old beats you, it's not real fun. Well, it turns out According to Seattle Police Detective Denise Cookie, there are a lot of kids who are really interested in chess. And so what she decided to do to help kids, to keep them on the right path, something that we talk about on the show a lot, she started this chess tournament. She did it in Rainier Beach in Seattle. She said, yeah, I want to give a kid an alternative to being bored and then ultimately getting into some trouble. She spoke with Fox 13.
If you don't give your kids something positive to do, they will eventually find some other activity or somebody recruit them in some negative activities.
100%. 100%. And again, higher likelihood of that happening if they come from a broken family. And part of the reason why, and this is something I actually agree with some folks on the left who at least make this a big part of their philosophy. It's not really ideological at all, but they say, look, we got to put more money into local clubs and resources for kids to do things after school on weekends. 100% agree. 100% agree. And so over the weekend, they held this second chess tournament. About 150 kids showed up. It's called the Detective Cookie Chess Classic. It's too many. I get what they're doing with the CC. Like, I got it. It's a lot, though. You know, alliteration is a little overused. And alliteration is for the simpleton, okay? I want a good metaphor.
I guess I'm a simpleton.
Oh, God. That's true. So, I'm kidding. Here is a girl, I think, who played in the tournament.
You kind of have to, like, control your own pieces, and so you're, like, in control of the board.
Oh, is that the strat? You know, now I know why I lost to that 11-year-old. I thought I was supposed to give the control of the board to him. God, where was this poor little girl? Why could she not tell me this before I got my butt kicked?
So that's pretty fun because, like, if you lose something, then you're kind of like you blame yourself, kind of, and then you do better next time.
So everyone knows I like to make fun of children. Did she just basically say that if you mess up, then you lose? Is that basically what she's? Okay. Definitely teaching life lessons over there at the chess tournament. I'm kidding. The detective is obviously passionate about this. This is not something that she has to do, but she's choosing to do it. And I will note, it does kind of sound like she's using this as an opportunity to turn kids into narcs.
And I play chess with them at the same time I'm talking about issues. And some kids are telling me things
that maybe they shouldn't be telling you. And you know what happens to the snitches?
That's been happening to them that's inappropriate, or somebody's trying to force them into a game. And then that's when I step in and be that mother part and make sure that they're going to be safe when they're not at chess.
I don't know how long these conversations are going, but do you guys both suck at chess? What's going on that you can have these long conversations with one another? Is she throwing the game? Is she going real slow so she can pull more information out of these kids? So, you, what about Talls over there? Where are you selling drugs, you think? Huh? Yeah, okay. What corner? You know, what is his? What are some of his henchmen look like? Yeah. Am I the only one who thought of that? I think that that's brilliant. Is that not brilliant? She's going to use this to get these kids to give over information?
I mean, given the state Seattle's in, is that really the worst thing in the world?
I love it. I'm not saying it's bad. I think this is awesome. I mean, it might turn some people off, so I'm making it all up. All you kids who are in troubled neighborhoods and maybe have troubled backgrounds, ignore everything I just said. They don't get any actionable intelligence out of this whatsoever. Because you're a dopey kid playing chess. You're not even very good.
When they say Detective Cookie, you saved my life. You know, I was involved in games, and you pulled me out of that, and you had me to do chess. Or Detective Cookie, I just want you to know, I'm in my first year at law school.
I don't want that lawyer, if I'm being totally honest. But I love this. I really do. As much as I'm teasing her, I think that this is awesome. I wish we would do more things like this. It's not easy to set something up. I imagine that the SPD is giving some support, not just to promote it, but probably in just some of the, you know, the hours that maybe need to be committed to planning something like this. I'm sure that they're giving her some institutional support. This is what we need to see happen. Now, kids tend to be a little dumb. especially because of the COVID stuff. So you might want to do Checkers. Let's maybe go to Checkers. And I love the idea of maybe just having like a board game club. You remember the game Guess Who?
That was good. That was a good one.
Such a great game that you can no longer do because you can't ask gender anymore.
It's true.
Is that not valid? You can't, if you're Guess Who, you say, okay, is it a male? I don't see gender. Like, imagine playing with someone who's woke. And by the way, they probably have a woke version of Guess Who
now. You probably can't play it with someone who has like purple hair or something.
Yeah, well, you've got, now that might be one of the characters, right? So you're going to have to really say, well, is they a barista? And then you know automatically it's got someone with pink or blue hair and non-binary and probably has the name like Chris, but you don't know if it's spelled with a C or a K. I think I just can't put that in the book of good ideas that we have to trademark. It's just simple pink. This one's really easy. This one's not difficult. And yet he goes for the red. Oh my God. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. Make sure you weigh in on anything you've heard, anything you want to push back on, any joke you want to make. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, we're going to dive into the big local. But first, don't forget our local tax expert and advocate, Greg Nunn, wants you to know the IRS is going after older cases very aggressively. So if you received a form CP-504 from the IRS, do not ignore it. If you owe money, and you know if you do, be proactive. Call Greg Nunn at Nunn Better Tax Resolution. Google N-U-N-N. Nunn Better Tax Resolution.
King County teen crime is spiking. King County's answer, TikTok challenge, stop detaining teenagers. Tomorrow morning, Practice Friday on the Brian Suit Show.
Olympia, Sammamish, Lakewood, Bellevue.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Bellingham, Kirkland, Z-Town.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that, 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local. It's brought to you by Alpine Specialty Services. They're online at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore the stories coming out of Seattle and instead focus all of our attention on the communities you live in and care about most. We actually have an update to a story I brought you a couple weeks ago of a teacher in Mukilteo, specifically a math teacher at Mariner High School. Her name is Sabaya Sheikh. The reason why we brought you her story was because when you go to her Facebook page, it is filled with anti-Semitic and Hamas propaganda. It is disturbing. But the reason why the Daily Mail called a little bit of attention to what was going on at this particular school with this particular teacher is because she had, according to emails, she had tried to raise money for a group run by not just an anti-Semite, but a complete and utter degenerate radical. Someone who had defended sex slaves, women for Muslim men. Like, this is a crazy person who has in the past denied that October 7th actually happened. It is pretty disturbing. And so when a group found out what she was doing, they put up the emails. There were a lot of mostly right-leaning websites and news outlets covering this, bringing attention to it. Well, now members of the National Education Association are speaking up. The NEA is a significant union. Now, it's not the NEA leadership doing that, but it is one of the groups within the NEA, and it's specifically a group that is run by someone named Jani Finkelstein, who's a member of the Jewish Affairs Caucus. And speaking to the Daily Mail, school administrators must set clear expectations and deter teachers like Sabaya Sheikh from pushing and supporting extreme political views without consequences. Urgent action is needed to address the rise of anti-Semitism in schools, ensuring transparency and oversight to prevent the indoctrination of anti-Israel falsehoods and hate among American students. Now, there's very clearly an anti-Semitism problem on campuses, and it's not just college. We talked to a parent out in the Bellevue School District who has kids dealing with this virulent anti-Semitism, being called awful names, asking to take sides between Israel and Hamas, swastikas being drawn. This is alarming. And I've heard from and featured a ton of parental voices on this very issue on the show, saying pretty much the same thing. And no one seems to want to take this all that seriously. You get statements coming from school districts that don't really give you any information because it's a personnel issue. We've got parents saying they're emailing principals and not really hearing back anything of substance. Again, just sort of these talking points. Oh, we take accusation of anti-Semitism seriously. We want an inclusive environment for everyone. But they don't actually do anything and nothing actually changes. Now, there are going to be some one-off examples where they actually do step up, and kudos to them. But they've been allowing this to go on and on and on, to the point where at one school in the Issaquah School District, and I've got it available at ktth.com, they had this teach-in to talk about what happened between Israel and Hamas. And at this teach-in, I got the PowerPoint. Not only was it filled with stuff that's just factually inaccurate, I ended up getting the notes that were used. There was one administrator at the school who was concerned. She's Jewish, she was concerned. So she actually went and she took notes and she sent those notes to the principal. I got those notes via a public disclosure request. And in it, and I'm not making this up, the students who were running the teach-in blamed Israel for the death of George Floyd. Yeah. I've never even heard that conspiracy. I've never heard of that before. And yet, that's what they were telling other kids. And you wonder why there's anti-Semitism? We shouldn't. This is the exact reason. You just spread these lies, these hideous lies and smears. You demonize the other side, and then bam, all of a sudden, they're dehumanized, and you end up siding with Hamas. You end up justifying rape against Israeli women. Because you don't really even see them as humans. That's how anti-Semites see Jews, not as human, which allows them, I guess, internally to justify their hatred and the violence that gets used. It's despicable. And if kids are getting this over and over and over again in classrooms, day after day after day, yeah, that propaganda takes a toll and they start believing it, which is why whenever we can, we highlight the teachers who do this. We want to call them out. Meanwhile, in Everett, there's a gazebo that's very old at Clark Park. And it's a gazebo that only criminals use. It's now up for demolition. And yet there's a small group of folks who are apparently pushing back because they don't want to see something that's 103 years old that is a historical gem. They don't want to see it get destroyed. But the park managers for the city of Everett, they say, look, this thing needs a ton of repairs. It's going to cost a lot. It's going to cost a lot. Right now, all it's doing is attracting crime, like drug dealings going on. You've got homeless people who are camped out in this gazebo, particularly if it's wet out at the time. And so this was presented to Mayor Cassie Franklin, who said, okay, let's just get rid of it. Let's just blow it up. And I'll be honest, I'm not entirely sure how many people are actually upset about this. But there is a story up at mynorthwest.com, which is our parent website. And it was written by the local historian, Felix Bunnell. God love him. But if it was a 103-year-old anything, he's going to want to stop it from going away. This is just his thing. And I understand that passion. But just because something's old does not mean it's worthy of protecting and saving and keeping. Like, there's lots of old things that we don't actually need. And we've been able to, you know, make gazebos way better than this one. It's not even like a charming gazebo that you would go to like propose to someone or to tell them in the middle of their own proposal and their wedding getting started, no, I actually have been in love with you this entire time, and try to break up the actual wedding and then cause all sorts of drama. That's what you do in charming gazebos. That's not this one. This one literally looks like a crime or homeless gazebo. But Felix writes in his story, the gazebo was designed by noted architect Benjamin Turnbull. I don't know who Benjamin Turnbull is. I'm not sure I believe that it is a noted architect, but he says, I'm kidding. It was constructed in 1921 and has been host to hundreds of events over the years. In the recent past, it was fenced off to keep people out, but it's open now and has been for a few years. The gazebo does need to have some deferred maintenance issues addressed, as would be expected with any 103-year-old structure, but appears to be solid and not in any apparent danger of falling down, noted historian and gazebo expert. So again, I looked at the photo. It's up at mynorthwest.com. Every once in a while, we'll get these stories about a beloved bar that or beloved cafe or whatever that has to close in a month. And you get this like love letter printed in a local newspaper. You get someone lamenting the good times they had there and say, this is not fair. I can't believe it's closing. And then you ask, well, why is it closing? No one's showing up. Oh, so then it's not beloved. Why are we pretending that it was beloved? We get those stories almost every single month. And the real reason why they're closing is because no one has been going there for like the last decade. And they're like, we can't keep it up anymore. But please keep writing your love letters slash, you know, weird obituaries to these businesses that end up closing down. In Lake Forest Park, there's a 34-year-old by the name of Cameron Sharif. He is back in court again. He's facing new counts of felony charges because police say he's been exposing himself to young girls in the city we don't talk about during this segment, but I'll break the rules because he's from Lake Forest Park in Seattle. And it's been happening over the course, they say, of 2 months, January and February. And it was happening near a school. And they say it happened at least 14 times. An anonymous parent spoke with Como TV because it was actually her kid who was one of the victims.
This is something that happened over and over again between the beginning of January to the end of February. And really, it is truly a sexual assault. And we're talking about very young kids. My daughter is 13. She looks like she's much younger. The other victims, some as young as 10.
Yeah, so I'm not going to go as far as to say it's the same as a sexual assault. It obviously is not. One is going to be much more traumatic, but it is serious and it is traumatic. And what's especially concerning in a case like this, when we've covered exposure cases in the past, they generally don't make physical contact or start talking to the people who become their victims. This guy, according to police, did just that. And that's what's a little bit scary. Because that's like step two in a longer process of breaking the law. You start with the flashing from across the street and then running off or whatever it is you do. The second one is going up to the victim and getting really close. And in this case, they say he was asking them for directions before he decided to expose himself. That means there's probably going to be a step three. And that's when we might end up getting into the sexual assault territory. And that's why we take stories like this so incredibly seriously. So now we know he's been charged with commercial sexual abuse of a minor, communication with a minor for immoral purposes, and then indecent exposure. Here's a spokesperson for the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office.
When you have allegations like this, it doesn't only affect the victims individually, it affects the entire community. We hope that people have some reassurance from the work that's being done by police and prosecutors to get this before the court.
Now, the mother that we just heard speaking to Como said that her daughter, 13 years old, doesn't want to go for walks with the dog alone anymore. That's how traumatized she was by all of this. She doesn't want to be at home alone anymore. She says she doesn't want to take public transportation. That part I totally understand regardless of this. But, you know, this is someone who's now dealing with a significant trauma with someone who very easily, allegedly, could have escalated to that step three. So, you know, I don't know how you get treatment for things like this. Obviously, it's therapy. It's talking to a professional. But every time I see stories like this, I have a legitimate curiosity. I know parents talk to kids about the dangers of online stuff, right? I get that. Now more than ever. But do they still have conversations with their kids about not talking to strangers, which used to be like almost as a joke? It was said all the time, right? That this is the one thing the kids have to learn from their parents about staying safe. Don't talk to strangers. Don't talk to strangers. And it feels like all of that has just been transferred to a digital version of that message. There are still people out there who in real life are going to traumatize these kids. So please send me a text, because I'm legitimately curious about this. And every time I ask this question, I get a bunch of different answers. So 1-800-465-8770 is the number to text in. Let us know if you are a parent of kids who are relatively young or were young in the last few years and you had to have these conversations. Is this still being said? Do you attach this to the advice you're giving over, you know, don't ever go onto Reddit. That's probably a really good bit of advice for any child and frankly adult. Never go onto Reddit. Is that all you do, or do you step up and say, or step with more and say, you know, also don't talk to strangers? Because we also are in that like weird place where it's rude not to talk to a stranger if they like say hello. Like, let's be totally honest about this. As an adult, if an adult comes up to you and asks you for directions and you simply ignore them or just say, no, I can't talk to you. Like, that's weird. Now you say, well, just because you're an adult, of course that's weird. You can handle yourself. Okay, throw in a 14-year-old. It's the only person who's on the block, and you're going up to this person and say, hey, real quickly, do you know where the 7-Eleven is? The kid's going to feel weird just ignoring the person. So, like, I point this out. I don't have an answer. I have no idea what to do here. I'm curious what parents actually tell their kids. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, you pick the news. Story number one. Seattle City Attorney Ann Davison, she's charging someone dumb enough to put an alleged crime on Instagram. So maybe the advice to kids about digital life is not doing what it's supposed to. Or story number two. How Amazon is disrupting the pharmacy game. I wonder which story I chose here so that you wouldn't pick it so I can do the one I want. 1-800-465-8774, your text.
You picked the topic on the Jason Rand Show.
Indeed you do, and you fell for my evil plan. You went with, in this case, a Como report. Seattle City Attorney is charging an Instagrammer who was dumb enough to film himself driving 107 miles per hour throughout the city. They say a driver who police say is the source of constant complaints about noise and reckless driving in downtown Seattle now faces criminal charges filed by the Seattle City Attorney's Office. According to the charges, Miles Oliver Hudson, 20 years old, unapologetically posts videos of his reckless driving throughout the city, including a video in February where prosecutors say he filmed himself driving at 107 miles per hour on 4th Avenue. I imagine this is being done at night, because otherwise there would have been an accident for sure by now. A Seattle police detective said he was able to identify Hudson due to a Reddit page that was, quote, exclusively dedicated to logging the citizens' complaints regarding Hudson and his vehicle. According to the police report, it says, on this page, there were photos of what appeared to be the exact same vehicle that Hudson owns. It had the same vinyl wrap and the same color, with the same wide body kit and the same tiger stripe Hellcat logos. Don't put that on your car, dude. Why would you do that? Seattle police stopped Hudson last week for speeding near 4th Avenue and Yesler Street, so I guess he wasn't driving fast enough. The police report says, I asked Hudson why he didn't just go to a racetrack to utilize his vehicle there. He stated that he had almost 700 followers. Okay, he has 700,000 followers on Instagram. How is it that I have like 17,000? Now, I have a lot on Facebook, on Twitter, but I don't have 700,000 on Twitter. I have like 133. How? Put down in the book of ideas another bit possibility, speeding through downtown Seattle and posting it on Instagram. They say the amount of money he makes on filming his videos of him in his vehicle on the street has paid for the car. Hudson stated, quote, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. Definitely the language to use with a cop who just pulled you over for breaking the law. is it the smartest move, and any lawyer will tell you this. Confirm you will continue to break the law. Oh, my God. He says, I'm going to make a career out of this. Oh, you know, he's a little precocious, little lad. I mean, you got to give him a little bit of, he's got like the entrepreneurial spirit, right? I mean, he's using it for bad, but still.
Wish I had that kind of ambition.
Believe me, I do too. You've only been here for 3 days. I will say this. As much as obviously he should be punished and what he did is incredibly irresponsible, I'm not totally joking about this entrepreneurial spirit, right? I mean, he's doing something with his spirit that is potentially harmful. You could coach him and get him into the direction of doing things that are not quite as bad, right? I mean, he's living in a time in which social media influencers, which is a term that gets tossed around a lot, maybe too much, but they're obviously making a lot of money. Now, most of them are not making like Mr. Beast money, right? A lot of them are making $8 a month. Okay. They want you to think that they're doing well. They're not really. But obviously, there is money to be made by being a social media influencer. And if you've already got the talent to identify the kinds of tricks that might bring people onto a page that maybe don't break the law, there's value in that. And he's learning this at 20 years old. This is someone who, again, he's kind of going down the wrong path. I'm willing to bet his family is not the best. And you can maybe get him on the right path. I don't know how you do that, but this kid is clearly not the kind of danger we normally talk about when it comes to violence. It could still kill a lot of people. We just saw that in Renton, right? So this is, again, it's very serious and he needs to be punished. However, this is maybe someone who can be saved, depending on his background, right? I mean, if we find out, like in this case, like the other one, three other crashes because of speeding, that's something else. He got caught. He should pay a price. And maybe he could be motivated to do things the right way. That said, he is also an idiot, right? I mean, why would you tell the cop that you're going to continue to do this? I mean, he basically said, here's my business plan for social media. Here's what I'm going to continue to do. And also, 700,000, I've not heard. Have you heard of this person?
Never.
Right? I feel like I follow some of the sort of viral local Instagram accounts, like Dub Seattle. Like, I follow them. I've never heard of this.
Did you verify that he actually has that many followers? Or
that's what? No, the cop verified it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the detective put it in the police report. They say police also noted that they received frequent complaints about the noise from Hudson's vehicle exhaust. Okay, now everything I said about him, I take back. I can't stand that. What are we doing here? You know, you don't have to be loud to go fast anymore. Technology is amazing. You'll be astounded by what you can do in a car without going down this path of being just obnoxiously loud. You're not impressing anyone. Seriously, you're really not. And maybe I'm not, just because I'm not a car guy. Is that considered like masculine, I guess, or cool in some way? Because it's not like he's the only one who does that.
Yeah, it's kind of obnoxious in my opinion.
But it is, but I mean, is that what the kids do now?
I don't know. I see a lot of people like on Bellevue Way, these guys like blaring their engines, but.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you're so cool. And by the way, not that I want to turn into old man rants. I'm going to for a second. You also don't need to play the music so loud. Yes, I just said that. And I'm 29 years old. Yes, I said that. It's too loud. Why are we doing that? Again, you're not getting any enjoyment out of it, right? I'm not impressed by your subwoofer. I don't even know what that is. I just know it's something you're supposed to have to make music sound fine. Who cares? I don't want to feel your music in my bones. And yet, that's precisely what ends up happening in some of these cases. And if you're going to do that, pick something better. Because now I am officially in the age group where I say, I don't know who you're talking about. Who's the headliner of this big concert? I don't know who that is. What? They're the headliner? DJ Puffin stuff? What are you talking about? I'm now in that age. And now I feel sad and old. 1-800-465-8770. If you also feel sad and old and want to send me a text message so both of us can commiserate together about the inevitable, which is death, something of which I am now obsessed with. I can't get it out of my mind because I'm now, half of my life is done. And if you want to hear more about my depressing second half of life, you can become a podcast subscriber. We talk about this all the time, actually. It's called Jason Rant's The Leftovers. You can only get it if you are a podcast subscriber to The Jason Rant Show. So you can head on over to ktth.com. You can get the KTTH app or go wherever it is you get your downloads and just say Jason Rant Show.
King County teen crime is spiking. King County's answer, TikTok challenge, stop detaining teenagers. Tomorrow morning, Practice Friday on The Brian Suit Show.